This week is obviously very exciting. This is the Parsha. This is the grand revelation at Har Sinai. This is the foundation of the Jewish people. This is where we come from. If we were talking about the 90s, you know, if we were walking around into Eshet Torah in the 90s, they would just talk about this Parsha. You know, mass revelation, it's a big deal. And so in thinking about the Esrei Dibros and thinking about mass revelation, the question I'm wondering is, I guess to start out, how do we describe a Kodesh Baruch Hu?
Wow, that's heavy. I had the same question yesterday.
I mean,
not specifically heavy. Here, just in general.
Just in general, he's the creator.
Creator.
He's the creator.
So, the Ribono Shel Olam.
Ribono Shel Olam, creator of the world.
So is that's the be-all and end-all of a Kodesh Baruch Hu?
No, I mean, he's everything, but it's hard to, I mean, right. If the creator of the whole world, then I think that encompasses everything.
I'll push back. The creator of the whole world is not necessarily benevolent, is not necessarily caring, right. And so like Avinu Malkeinu might jump in.
He's all the 13 attributes. He's the Melech, he's the Rachmin, he's the Elohim, he's the Kevavke, he's right. Everything that...
So, what John, I think, is alluding to is the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu is infinite. Yeah. And we have no way of really narrowing down a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The only description that we can have of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that is absolute and accurate is Echad. That God is singular. God is unique, and he's not entirely unique or super unique, because unique means one of a kind. You can only be one of a kind, doesn't require any other descriptor, just one of a kind.
Right, that's right.
But we have all these different names of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that tell us about, how's God acting in the world today? In what way is he interacting with me? And so just like in certain contexts, I am sir, oftentimes inappropriately so, but sir. Right. Sometimes I'm rabbi, sometimes I'm husband, sometimes I'm brother.
Right, and it's all the same person.
But it's how am I acting? As a brother, I am most likely very annoying. As a husband, I am hopefully caring. As sir, I'm hopefully... appropriate.
Right.
And as rabbi, I like to come off as knowledgeable. But it's a question of, of how am I going to be, how are you going to be experiencing me today? And so Kodesh Baruch Hu does the same thing. And that's where we get all these different names that we see throughout the Torah, predominantly Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elohim of Rachamim and Din of mercy and judgment. And so with that in mind, I think it's interesting to look at how a Kodesh Baruch Hu introduces himself to Bnei Israel. Because what makes the revelation at Har Sinai so significant is that this is the introduction. A Kodesh Baruch Hu reveals himself to the entire Jewish people. Only time in history it ever happened.
Right.
So if God's revealing himself to his people, what does he do?
How would he introduce himself?
Yes. So,
and I see, based on the first, Sarah Dibros, it's on... That's how he's taken out of Egypt. That's number one.
So there's twofold to this. There's the specific names of Kodesh Baruch Hu, and then we're going to look into, particularly the first of the Dibros, as to how Kodesh Baruch Hu describes himself in a fuller sense. We start out,
and he uses the Kevavke, which is Rachamim. Right.
Well, he starts out and Vayidaber Elohim,
which is Din. Yes. So it's like,
so at first we interact with Kodesh Baruch Hu as Elohim. Elohim is the one who's talking. And then we get into Anochi, and we say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm Hashem, Mida of Rachamim, and then Din, Asher Setzichu Be'at Yisrael, we took you out of Egypt, Beis Avadim, from the house of slavery of bondage. And then in second one, he says, Lo Yelecha Elokim Acharim Alpanai, and you should not have any other Elokim.
Right.
And then he gets into all the details, but to start out those two Dibros, Kodesh Baruch Hu, introducing everything, is Din, and then we get Rachamim, and then Din, and then we get straight Din again. It's like a Din sandwich almost.
Yeah.
And we're actually not going to look at this Rashi at the moment, but the first two Dibros, arguably, are the most significant, because as Rashi explains to us on the bottom of the page, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu starts speaking to the Jewish people, and, talking to God is a pretty intense experience. And so, 3 million people drop dead.
Right.
And Moshe is looking around, and he's like, what just happened? Was this part of the plan? God's like, don't worry about this, I do it all the time. Brings them all back to life. Great. And so then
Then it happens again.
And then he says, and everyone drops dead. And Moshe's like, come on! And God's like, it's fine, I do this all the time, no big deal. Brings all the Jewish people back to life. Now they've died twice. And Moshe's like, okay, guys, ready for number three? One guy in the back is like, hey, crazy idea. What if you hear the rest, the next eight, and we'll just hang out over here, and you'll let us know what God said, and maybe we don't have to die every time God opens his mouth. And everyone's like, yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. We should do that. So that's what ends up happening. That's what Rashi explains in Yotes, that Vayhi kol shofar holich v'chazak me'od, Moshe yidaber v'halakim yanene b'kol, that Moshe would speak and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would respond. Moshe yidaber, Rashi explains, k'shehaya Moshe medaber mashpia hadibros l'Yisrael, shehari lo shamu m'pia gvur el anochi v'lo yiyelecha, that when Moshe would speak, and Moshe taught them the Torah, Moshe taught them the 8 out of 10 dibros, because they only heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, m'pia gvura, anochi, and lo yiyelecha. And Kadosh Baruch Hu helped him out. Kadosh Baruch Hu helped him project his voice, because even before they had microphones, nobody would be crazy enough to try and speak to 3 million people.
Right.
And so these really are the two where Kadosh Baruch Hu is introducing himself. The rest of them are messages through Moshe, and they're much less foundational of who Kadosh Baruch Hu is, and much more guidelines as to how to be Jewish.
Yeah.
And so, when we're looking at this, why does Kadosh Baruch Hu start with Din? Why start with Elohim? You could ask the same question in the beginning of the Torah, and now...
Because he also started with Elohim.
Yes, the entire first parak is Elohim. There's a beautiful Shemesh Shmuel, the Sakhar Cheva Rebbe, who talks about this in the context of Bereshis, but I think it applies just as well to Aseret Dibros on the other side of the page. And I think it applies, one, just you'll see the way he describes it, but also because to a large extent, we're recreating the world in Parshas Yisro, at Mamre Har Sinai. You can look at the Rashi in Yom HaShishi, that it's Vayevray book of Yom HaShishi instead of Yom Shishi. Rashi says that, mm-hmm. Hey, is that the Torah was the world was created on the condition that the Jewish people would receive the Torah.
Right.
But even beyond that, if you look at what's going on, Kadosh Baruch Hu is sort of retrying. He's restarting a covenant with the people. This is a larger shir and like a spiel that I'm obsessed with. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu basically didn't want the Jews to exist. There was no, the Jews are a B'dievet situation. We'll talk about that some other time.
He wanted the whole world.
He wanted the whole world, exactly.
That's right.
And so he's like, okay, we're going to try again. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, my world now, for the time being, is going to be within the Jewish people. And hopefully the ultimate goal.
Adam,
yeah.
And then Noach. Then Noach, and then it turns out.
Exactly.
Also, so it by force, I guess, I don't...
Yeah, right.
Got Abraham and say, okay, we're going to take Abraham.
Right.
And
we're going to try with Abraham, and ultimately we're going to try with Abraham's children, Bnei Israel. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu is recreating the world at Har Sinai. And so again, uses Elohim, followed by Yud Kei Vavke, Din, followed by Rachamim. So the Shem Yishmuel is a beautiful piece. Source 3. And so we'll start at the end of the first line, where it's bold. It's not the right word, but
You
know what I mean. Shebitzchila alav machshava livroso b'minas hadin v'rash in ha'olam miskayim v'hiktim minas harachmim v'shotva l'minas hadin. Initially, he thought, we'll just create the world with Din. We're just going to create it with Elohim, and the world really, because the world can't sustain with rachmim, with mercy, and so he partnered it with Midas Adin, but really Midas Adin was the ideal form. The plan was Midas Adin. Then appears Shkas Hashem Kipshuto Shira Acharkach Kishabar Sheinu Meskayim Kilo Chas Hashem B'Tchila Lo Yada Chas Hashem Lomar Kein. And he says it's not sequential. It's not that God's like, oh, this isn't really working so well. Let's try it again, we were describing before.
Right.
This is only within our experience of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, for sure. None of us are kofrim here. Only even some of us try, but it's still not working. We're not kofrim. Ella haperishu al pi masha kasva kachma emes ki beim lo haye b'minas adin shehu sod at simsum haye olam mispata b'mitzias. Without the minas adin, without boundaries, I mean, din is the lo tases in the Torah, the don'ts. It sets boundaries. If we didn't have that, we didn't have the foundation of simsum, of restriction, the things that I'm not going to do, the world would have fallen apart. Jewishkeit would fall apart.
And we saw how the world fell apart. There was no boundaries at all in the time of Enosh. Everybody did what they wanted, and and we saw what
precisely
happened
there. And Yiddishkeit,
they blotted man from the face of the earth.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yiddishkeit falls apart when there are no boundaries. Also,
right? Exactly.
When other movements will say, we're still going to be Jewish, we're still going to do mitzvos, but like, don't worry so much about the los ases, then pretty soon the movement stopped being legitimate.
Right.
And pretty soon the movement... Yeah.
Well,
the movement
exactly
ends up not being Jewish at all.
Look at Roger's park.
Right, precisely. So he says, V'rak machmas ha-hester v'atzimtzum ha-yamakum shul yisbat ha-olam v'tzius. And so the world's not going to exist anymore. Only with the things that we don't do are we able to sustain. The mitzvahs ase give us a reason to live. The mitzvahs los ase are the reason we stay Jewish. But if we didn't have los ases, it would be hard for us to stay in the confines of Yiddishkeit.
That's a good point. I mean, it makes
sense. It exists in a lot of contexts. Zachar and Shamar said it, B'dibur Echad, because you need both. Shabbos, this is a story that, I don't remember who tells it, but it happened with Rav Yoel Rakovsky in Yeshivat Netiv Aryeh. He was sitting with one of the students, and one of the students apparently slept through all of Shabbos. Not like a bagel where you sleep 12 hours, mamish, 25 hours. Maybe he like woke up, rolled over, but he slept the whole Shabbos. And he's like, oh my gosh, he slept the whole Shabbos. And he's like, Rebbe, this is amazing. This is the first time I've kept Shabbos in years. And Rav Yoel Rakovsky's like, you didn't break Shabbos, but you didn't keep Shabbos. There was no Kiddush, there was no Kabbalah Shabbos. You didn't have a Shabbos. So yeah, we could just live with los ases, but we wouldn't really be living. We wouldn't really be experiencing Yiddishkeit. So you can't just have the boundaries. You need to have you can't just have the din. You need to have the rachamim.
Right.
But the rachamim can't be the start of it, because if you're just doing ases, it all falls apart. If you're just doing things that are exciting and feel good, Yiddishkeit doesn't last. And that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu starts the world with din. Effectively, the way Rav Baruch Simon of YU explains it, the din creates a box. And then the rachamim fills the box, but if you try and impose din once you start with rachamim, it's not going to work because everything starts out a mess. Water, when it goes into a cup, functions very nicely, but if you have water and then you try and put it onto the cup, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So why does the Kodesh Baruch Hu open the Hesaret Debros with Minas Hadin with Elokim by Yidaber Elokim is called Yom HaElyon? Because he's explaining to them that, guys, you're going to be Jewish, this is going to be wonderful and a beautiful relationship, but it starts with din. If you don't have these boundaries, you're going to go extinct. Sham Tei Kuraskam is going to be very literal. You're not going to be Jewish anymore. And so he starts out with din. But it goes one step further. This is a kuzari I came about a little over a year ago, and I'm obsessed with it. And I basically will just take any excuse I can to share with people, because I think that most people don't know it, and I think it's so cool. The Kuzari is a conversation, it's not a real conversation, but the Kuzari is a conversation that Rabbi Yehuda Levi sort of describes between the Kuzar king, between a non-Jewish king, and a rabbi. Or, in this case, a chaver, basically a rabbi. And he says, Elokim, what does the name Elokim mean? He says, Elokim, Torah lemoshel b'davar min hadvarim, ula dayan shalom. Elohim is describing powers that exist, and the power over those powers. V'yesh sheyeh b'chol shehu rotza bo moshel b'olam kulo. V'yesh sheyeh b'chelek shehu rotza bo koach mikokos agagal o teva min atvarim o dayim ibnei adam. Basically, the Kuzari is explaining, what does the name Elohim mean? There are lots of kalim. There's lots of kales. Or an ale. Ale means powerful. It means power. And so when a person walks outside and they see that the sun is shining and it's giving them warmth, that's a power that exists in the world. The sun is a power. The moon is a power. And you know, if we're talking Lagabe Egyptians, then the Nile seemingly is a power. There are all these powers. They're Elim. It's these different powers that exist. And so the name Elohim is saying, oh, you know the Nile? And you know the sun, and you know the moon, and you know all the different powers that you think exist in the world. Those are all subsumed, not in their own gods. It's not, you know, the sun god and the moon god are fighting, and when the sun god wins, it's sunny out, and when the moon god wins, it's dark out, and you know, winter and summer are fighting, and when the winter wins, the Zoroastrians, which are the coolest named religion of all time, Zoroastrians is like the prime. Is the most susceptible kind of kfira that I think Jews can experience. Zoroastrians believe in two powers, good and bad, and anytime the good's happening in the world, it's because the good god is winning, and anytime bad's happening in the world, it's because the bad god is winning, which a lot of people unfortunately kind of think. the notion of like the devil and like the ministering angel and God seems to fit into that, and so Christianity is not so far off from Zoroastrianism if you misunderstand Christianity.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of Jews think that Judaism is a lot like Christianity. That's a whole separate schmooz. A lot of people experience Yiddishkeit as the way Christians experience Christianity. But all these different kelim, all these different powers that exist in the world are not powers in their own right. It's like what Avraham Avinu said. It's not that the sun can, and the moon can exist separately, but that they all exist under HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Elohim, is the Melech Malchei Melechim, is the King of Kings. Mm-hmm. He is the power over all powers that exist. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything that happens, not just one or two things. Everything. That's part of what the Tzias Mitzrayim is all about. The Esar Makos were showing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules it all. Every god that exists, every kind of Avodah Zarah that existed in Egypt, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically said, they got nothing on me.
Right.
And so that's how the Kuzari explains the name Elohim. That Elohim is all-powerful. Okay. But what does that mean for Yudke Vavke? What does the Shem Havaya teach me? This, I think, is just so beautiful. In the bold at the bottom, Vaidaikus Vahamala Hayasera, Eina Ki'im B'Shem HaNichbad Yud He, and then Vav He Yisbarach. But the ultimate name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's primal name, is Yud Kei Vav Kei. All right, fine, we're familiar with that. Hu Shem Nora Ramuz Ela Bidmus, Lo B'Makom Acher Asher Lo Hayanoda, Ki Hayanikra Elokim Bichlal. And that's his ultimate name. That's the foundation of his name. That's the one that most consumes who he is. V'nikra yudke vavke b'his yachid. And this isn't a precise translation, but he's called yudke vavke as a first, as an individual. Effectively, the Kuzari is saying, yudke vavke is not a title. It's not a description of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates in the world. Yud Kei Vav Kei is not per se Rachamim. Yud Kei Vav Kei is God's first name. He says, Hashem, Kamo Sheata Omer, Ploni, B'Shem Noda. When you say Yud Kei Vav Kei, when you say Hashem, you're calling God by his first name. Like you call Joe Shmo. Like you would say Kit Ruvain, V'Shimon. Akarei Asher Yuvam, Mimilas Ruvain, V'Shimon, Amitas Atzmeyem.
Who am I? Something you limited.
Interesting. So a name would seemingly be limiting to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and to say that Yudkei Vavke is Kadosh Baruch Hu's name would limit him.
But nothing can limit
him. First of all, Kadosh Baruch Hu named himself.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Even in here, if we look at the name Yudkei Vavke, so we've got God's first name, we have God Yudkei Vavke representing Midat HaRachamim of mercy. Yudkei Vavke is Hayahu V'Yihyeh. Yes, there's a limit. Kadosh Baruch Hu does limit himself in this world. It's not that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not all powerful. It's not all knowing. It's that Kadosh Baruch Hu, in his interactions with us in this world, it has tzimtzum, has this capitalistic idea of constricting himself. So when Kadosh Baruch Hu introduces himself to us, yeah, he's saying, "I'm going to restrict myself to some extent." So while you're right,
because otherwise we can't be comprehended.
Right. At the same, it's not going to work. One of my favorite things that I don't remember who told me that, but it's like so obvious when someone says it, that I would never want a God that I could understand. I deliberately want to worship someone, something, some entity that is beyond my grasp. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not worth worshiping.
Well, he defined himself by his own name, which is not definable. You can look at it that way, too.
What I think is so powerful about this is that when we're talking to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, when we say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, we're not talking up there. It's Baruch Atah Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei right in front of me. I'm talking to you, John. Thank you for the water, Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Thank you for the water,
and it's very literal. This actually comes up when we're davening Shemone Esrei, because when we daven Shemone Esrei, we do something funny. We say Baruch Atah Hashem, which is blessed are you, and blessed isn't a word, but blessed are you, God. It's a second person. We're talking to each other. Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Master of the Universe. Okay, fine. Asher Hakol Nihye Bidvaro. Very much third person. Everything is in His word. We go from second to third person.
Right.
That doesn't work. So, Kabbalistically, I mean, Al Pi Chassidus, the way I've come to understand it, I heard from Rabbi Real Blumenthal, like 10 years ago, almost. I heard this in NCSY Shabbaton, and I was, I don't know if any of the teens are into this, but like I'm loving it. And he said that we say Baruch Atah when we're interacting face-to-face with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem, and we bow. When we bow, that's when we're bowing. But when we get to Shem Hashem, we realize, like, we're not really on a first-name basis. This is, like, kind of a joke to be on a first-name basis. And so...
we go back to the...
And so we don't actually even say Shem Havaya.
Right.
We don't pronounce the Yud-Heh and Vav-Heh. We use the Lashon Adnut. We refer to God as our master, and we stand up straight, and then we transition into third person. Because as soon as you start interacting with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you realize that, like, there can't really be much of an interaction. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, in telling us his first name and introducing himself this way, almost tells us, come, like, I want to have a relationship with you. And then we're like, okay, but we recognize that we can't have a full relationship the way that, like, John and I can have a relationship. It's not quite the same. And with this in mind, I think that the start of this Arsad Dibros is so beautiful. Because the Kodesh Baruch Hu introduces himself, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Yisrael Beis Avadim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. There's a concept of putting your best foot forward. You know, you step into an interview, you gotta make yourself look good, and you don't want to be such a Bogaiva, but at certain points of time, you gotta tell people who you really are.
Right.
I'll leave it. I'm trying to remember who the rabbi is. I don't remember who the rabbi is, but when Rabbi Mordechai Becher was here a few weeks ago, he's telling a story about a rabbi who was in court, and the judge is like asking him, he's like, sir, it says here in your affidavit that you are the most knowledgeable rabbi in the country. And he says, yes, that's true. He says that you're widely respected as being honest and true. He says, yes, that's true. And he says that the vast majority of the people in this country look up to you. He says, yes, that's true. He says, Rabbi, if I may, off the record, where does humility come into play if you're telling us about how great you are? And he's like, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I'm under oath. I got to be honest. And if I'm being honest, then these things are all true. And so Kodesh Baruch Hu seemingly has to be honest. This is the time when a Kodesh Baruch Hu's got to pull out all the stops. He's introducing himself to Bnei Yisrael. So if I'm introducing myself to Bnei Yisrael, why would I say, I took you out of Egypt? How about, I created the world! I'm the Ribono Shel Olam! I took you out of Egypt. That was nice. But it's not creating the world. Something from nothing. Except according to the Rashbam. But not according to Arisrael's Rashbam. That's my own little fort. But why does he say, Asher Tzitzicha Me'eretz Yitzrayim? If we think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu introducing himself on a first-name basis, where he's not Mr. Washington, he's not President Washington, it's not Hashem Elokim in a title, it's, hi, I'm George, hi, I'm Yudkei Vavkei, I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then this is the most appropriate way for him to introduce himself. Because this is the most intimate
experience.
Exactly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, we have to start out with Din. We need a structure. But understand, my goal here is to build a relationship with you. I'm Hashem, Yudkei Vavkei. That's who I am. That's my first name. That's how I want you guys to know me. That's how I want you guys to bless me. That's how I want you guys to daven to me. And to show you that I took you out of Egypt. And that's how I want you to keep me in mind. When you think about me, think about the fact that I took you out of Egypt. Not that I created the world. Not that I can do all these impressive things. But that I care about you so much that I took you out of Egypt. So when a Kodesh Baruch Hu starts out this process, he's really focusing and fixating on the fact that I want to get to know you on a first-name basis. I want to have a relationship with you. And from there, the rest of Yiddishkeit continues. Shkayach.
But it starts with that.
Yeah.
By the Baal Hakim. Yeah. It's all in.
Because if you
we're having a personal relationship.
Exactly.